Now, some of you are sitting really far back, so if you want to just sort of keep your eyes closed and slither up closer. It's kind of lonely up here, but no pressure. If you're comfortable where you are, stay where you are. Maybe I'll move closer to you. Again, just kind of stay in your own inner experience, but just really feel the core. Just tune into your belly, and if you think of Mata, the womb, and that chant is so beautiful because we're naming, and in the process of naming, we're becoming, we're articulating that possibility within us of pure masculine and deep feminine. And it's that perfect balance. Oh, look, we're closer now. That perfect marriage. It's so nice when one opens the eyes and suddenly everything has changed. That's the great thing about this life, isn't it? However challenging it may be on one day, then it shifts again. And it gets less so. The dance of challenge and not challenge. Challenge and ease. So, Mata, you know, it's that great womb container of everything. And then that Shamba Shiva, that abode of bliss, they're really intricately woven together. I can't really do the separation thing so much I used to be able to do. In some ways we think of the masculine as the container. Some ways we think of the feminine as the container. It doesn't really matter. We've been contemplating the relationship of creativity and compassion. You know, in Deva Yoga, we personify creativity as the goddess Saraswati, and compassion. She's not really a goddess. She's actually a celestial bodhisattva, but people think of her as a goddess, as Kuan Yin or Tara. They're kind of the same archetype. I mean, I say that in such a flip way. They're like the same archetype. Compassion. We've been chanting their mantras, which is always wonderful. But I want to read you a little bit, and I want to talk to you a little bit, and then we'll see where we go from there. It's been a while since I've had class. Seems like there's things that must be said. We were going to have a summer retreat here in June, but I'm recording a new album, and I realized I couldn't do both. It was just, I'm 67 years old, and I'm feeling my age, and I can't multitask the way I used to. I just can't. I can't record a whole new album and also teach and host an all-day retreat. So I surrender to reality. And even though I feel really sad to not be having a retreat here, really sad, I mean heartbreaking in fact, I know it was the right decision. But this is the story that was actually going to be the core of the retreat. So I will read it to you. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give all the teachings from the retreat over the course of, you know, Monday night class. So I'm just getting a flashlight here. So it's a Clarissa Pinkola Estes story. Some of you may know it. It's in Women Who Run with the Wolves. And it's the four Rabbinim. You know the story? It's a lovely story. One night, four Rabbinim were visited by an angel who awakened them and carried them to the seventh vault of the seventh heaven, which in yoga speak we could call the crown chakra, right? There they beheld the sacred wheel of Ezekiel, which we would call the thousand-petaled lotus. Somewhere in the descent from paradise to earth, one rabbi, having seen such splendor, lost his mind and wandered frothing and foaming until the end of his days. That would be someone with no container. The second rabbi was extremely cynical. Oh, I just dreamed Ezekiel's wheel. That was all. Nothing really happened. That would be someone who's too in his head. The third rabbi carried on and on about what he had seen, for he was totally obsessed. He lectured and would not stop with how it was all constructed and what it all meant. And in this way, he went astray and betrayed his faith. So this guy, he's on an ego trip, right? Arrogance. Well, we won't psychoanalyze him now, we'll let him be. But anyway, definitely, too much ego. We would psychoanalyze if we had more time tonight, but not tonight. The fourth rabbi, who was a poet, took a paper in hand and a reed and sat near the window writing song after song, praising the evening dove, his daughter in her cradle, and all the stars in the sky. And he lived his life better than before. Right? It's a beautiful story. I mean, there it is. What else is there to say after that story? And that's what we're about here. That's what we're about. We don't do any of these practices. We don't contemplate any of these sublime teachings. We don't reach inside of ourself looking for these luminous potentials to do anything but lead a better life. You know, be more present in the minutiae of daily life. Be more here and less there. It's not about the exaltation of spiritual enlightenment peak experiences. That's, in the end, that's just kind of dust. It's just such a big nothing. The only thing that really matters is finding that portal inside and entering into that reservoir of profound stillness, luminosity, whatever word you want to use, and living from that place. And that's why we do practice. We do practice to quote-unquote purify, I don't like that word, but to ease the mind out of its tendency to grasp outside of itself for answers, meaning, direction, etc. That's what the mind does. It's always reaching out and getting caught up in something like, you know, what can I do today? What can I be today? What do I need to make my life more perfect? So creativity and compassion, it's a very, very interesting balancing act. Because when I speak of the creative, I'm not necessarily speaking of making art, although that's a lovely way to spend one's time. But what I'm speaking of is the speaking of our truth. What I'm speaking of is the expression of ourself in the world. And that is a creative act. Right? But too much expression that's not balanced with an equal measure of compassion can run into various kinds of problems. It can move into a self-absorbed direction, a grandiosity like that one rabbi, or it can become so hard on itself, so critical of itself, that it silences itself. Right? So we want all of our creative manifestation, again, every action in life, and I'm talking about outward actions like washing the dishes or relating to the people that we live with or the creatures that we live with, what all of these are actions. And they can all be infused with the power of our deep creative nature. And the more they are, the more we allow all of our action in the world to be infused with what I call the deep creative nature, the more everything we do just has a kind of a beauty. It's like it becomes permeated with the power of the creative, which is the power of beauty. But not beauty like, you know, the women at the Met Gala on the red carpet. We're not talking, I mean, that can be really beautiful, but that's an external beauty. We're not talking so much about external beauty here, although, I mean, I'm This vein is the next one. I mean, I love external beauty. But here we're talking about that internal balance. It's that perfect symmetry within us where we feel beautiful. And some of you will say, well, that's not a feeling. And I know that, but you know what I'm saying. There's that sense. All my private clients are like, you can tell who's heard the that's not a feeling lecture 4,000 times. When we feel beautiful, when we're aligned with our own internal sense of balance, we have the experience of being our own beauty. Right? So the creative and the kind of, how can I say, the creative and the compassionate heart work beautifully together inside of us. And each one is often personified or expressed in a metaphor of water, which is why I thought today with all the rain it was kind of perfect to hang in there still with Saraswati and Kuan Yin. So I'm going to read you a poem. This is Mary Oliver. She writes, "The man who has many answers is often found in the theater of information." This is like the third rabbi, where he offers graciously his deep findings. Right? "The man who has many answers is often found in the theater of information, where he offers graciously his deep findings. While the man who has only questions," I should say, in this group, since we're all women, I should say women, "while the woman who has only questions to comfort herself makes music, while the woman who has only questions to comfort herself makes music. The woman who has many answers is often found in the theaters of information, where she offers graciously her deep findings. While the woman who has only questions to comfort herself makes music." While the woman who has only questions to comfort herself. And it's really interesting, you know, if you think about what's the difference between a question and an answer, I think it's pretty obvious. An answer is closed, a question's open. And I love how she says, who only asks questions to comfort herself, because generally we want answers to comfort ourselves, right? Generally we feel anxiety when we sense some lack. Or if we're the kind of person that feels anxiety, that's when we're going to feel it. And so we want an answer. That's how we defend against the anxiety of not knowing. Just give me an answer and I'll feel better, right? But what we want is to just be really comfortable in the question. That's one of the goals of the inner journey. And to just let the question keep opening. So that in the Clarissa Pinkola Esti story, obviously the rabbi who's going around preaching and, you know, giving courses and doing God knows what, he's caught in answers. Whereas the one who's just singing the name, that's the ever-unfolding journey into nothingness. You know what the Buddhists call shunyata. I was at the Whitney last week and it was really crowded and kind of crazy there. But I sort of found the George O'Keeffe painting on the top floor, and I just sort of stood in front of this painting. And you know, there were crowds just thronging around me, but I just like stood in front of the painting and entered into a rather extraordinary rapport with the painting, which stayed with me for days afterwards. And when I got back from the city that night, I sat down at the piano and I was just, that painting was just right in front of me. And I was just at the piano, just working on some music and just singing. And it was such an experience of question. It was so open. There was no longing for reason or answer or need to understand or breakthrough. been sort of wrestling with some new music, and I haven't been able to quite get what I want. And that was all gone. It had just all dissolved in this wondrous spaciousness that painting opened up inside of me. And it's funny because the painting is called Music. She was trying to paint music. And it's like when we enter into that very mysterious realm, I mean, that's a mysterious realm. A painting that's trying to paint music, that's out there. And we enter into that, there's no answers there. It's just pure being. That's the song of the self. And if there's a goal, that would be it, to just continue opening into our own sublime, multi-layered presence. To call it a goal is an oxymoron because it's always going deeper. There's no end point. It's pure spaciousness. It's infinity. I've seen this in my life so many times now, just when I thought I had it all worked out, the bottom falls out and we have to start over. But that's what people say, oh, you look so young. That's what keeps me, I think, in this more youthful kind of way, is that for whatever reason, this life has not allowed me to get stuck in answer. It just always breaks the answers apart and pushes me down to the next round in the spiral.